Let's call the second case, which is 18-1056 Colbruno v. Kessler. Ms. Horn, you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honors. Before I begin, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. My name is Michelle Horn. I'm an assistant city attorney for the City and County of Denver, and I represent William Kessler, Samantha Keeler, Tina Klozuski, Ryan Sawitsky, Thomas Tyndall, and Stefan Petit, all of whom are with the Denver Sheriff Department. We are the appellants here, and we're asking this court to reverse the district court and grant each of these defendants qualified immunity in their personal capacities against the allegations made by Mr. Colbruno.
Should we treat all of the defendants similarly? Are you arguing there's distinctions among their respective potential liabilities?
There are distinctions, Your Honor. Three of the defendants participated in the entire transport of Mr. Colbruno. Three other defendants met Mr. Colbruno at the hospital, and therefore their liabilities are a little bit different.
Why does that matter?
It matters in that if, in the totality of the circumstances, if it matters to the court that Mr. Colbruno's transport was delayed and that the deputies were somehow responsible for the urgency that they faced at the hospital getting Mr. Colbruno into treatment, it does matter that three of the deputies were at the hospital and didn't participate in any way in the delay, possible delay of Mr. Colbruno's treatment.
Is there any argument that the deputies were following the directive of the commanding officer at the hospital?
You're correct, Your Honor. The complaint does say that Sergeant Petit was the ranking officer and that he did himself make the decision to transport Mr. Colbruno into hospital without clothing. However, all of the deputies participated in that transport. Your Honor, the defense of qualified immunity puts the burden on Mr. Colbruno to show both a constitutional violation and that the law was clearly established at the time of the incident. The Supreme Court has made clear that Mr. Colbruno bears a heavy burden and that the standard is exacting. I'm going to discuss the clearly established prong of qualified immunity first. This case presents a unique set of facts and circumstances, and as the Supreme Court said in White versus Polley, this alone provides an important indication that the defendant's conduct did not violate a clearly established right.
Is this a Fourth Amendment case or a 14th Amendment case?
Your Honor, it has been pled as both a Fourth Amendment case and a 14th Amendment case. However, I believe the Supreme Court's decision in Albright versus Oliver does not, that means that Mr. Colbruno does not have a 14th Amendment claim here as a Fourth Amendment.
Why is it a Fourth Amendment claim?
Mr. Colbruno is alleging improper seizure and a violation of his right to privacy protected by the Fourth Amendment.
Right. Well, he wasn't seized in the traditional sense. He was a prison detainee who's transported to the hospital.
Right? I agree, Your Honor. There's nothing traditional about this case. It was not a traditional seizure. There was no allegation that he was not validly in the custody of the Denver Sheriff Department.
Well, it's traditional in a sense that, I mean, if the officers made an inmate stand naked in the middle of the prison cafeteria for a half hour, that's probably a fairly unique case. Why isn't, if that's the Fourth Amendment violation, how's that really different than this one?
Your Honor, I believe there are, as pled in the complaint, there are several important factors that make this, that distinguishes this case, the Colbruno case, against the case you just mentioned. First of all, Mr. Colbruno was suffering from a severe mental illness that made him dismantle an emergency call box in his cell and ingest portions of the call box and certain screws. He was not acting rationally in that regard.
Well, what if the prison made him stand naked in the cafeteria during a psychotic episode while he'd ingested metal for an hour before they transported him to the hospital? Wouldn't that be a clearly established violation of some right?
There is, at some point in that analysis, Bell versus Wolfish analysis, there is a constitutional violation here. However, the constitutional violation for the circumstances faced by Mr. Colbruno is not clearly established. For the circumstances that he was undergoing a psychotic episode, that he was being taken to the hospital for urgent medical care,
the Denver is saying that Bell versus Wolfish would be the closest analogous Fourth Amendment case, notwithstanding which you're saying that it would not be clearly established that it would apply here. So is that the case that we would rely on
to a Fourth Amendment violation? You have to consider Bell versus Wolfish because it is the overarching Supreme Court case regarding.
Well, Mr. Lane asked us to look at those strip search cases and bodily integrity cases. Why aren't those a better fit here?
Because this wasn't a strip search. First of all, it doesn't meet the state court definition of a strip search, in that there is no allegation in the complaint that anyone in particular, it's not attributed to any actor, removed Mr. Colbruno's clothing. Second of all, it is admitted in the complaint that it would not be reasonable for Mr. Colbruno to have continued wearing his clothing in its state being soiled upon by Mr. Colbruno. Right.
They allege that it would be a simple matter to put on a clean smock and parade and take him to the emergency room clothed.
That is not alleged in the complaint, Your Honor. They have made that argument in the appellate briefs. It is not in the complaint. And while Mr. Colbruno is entitled to the inferences from the factual allegations in his complaint, that is not a reasonable inference from what is pled in the complaint. Because, first of all, Mr. Colbruno is undergoing a psychotic event and is ingesting strange articles, items.
Wait. I'm just looking at the complaint. This is this sentence. Defendants made no effort to obtain another smock or any other item that would have allowed Colbruno to enter the hospital in a dignified manner.
Yes, Your Honor. That is alleged.
Why did not? There's a distinction here I'm missing then.
Your Honor, was whether an appropriate, suitable article of clothing was readily available and would not have delayed the transport.
Okay, and you don't think that's a reasonable inference from a hospital, being at a hospital, that there's a smock available?
Your Honor, it assumes that any article of clothing would have been appropriate for an individual undergoing a psychotic event that ingests strange objects. It also assumes
And why is that an unreasonable assumption?
Your Honor, because Mr. Colbruno was wearing a smock. In prison terms, that's a suicide smock, which means it cannot be ripped apart and ingested. And any sheet, article of clothing, whatever you have, would not necessarily fit that requirement.
But it's clear he was shackled at the time. So, you know, they can drape anything over him just to cover his body. He's shackled, so he's not going to be running away.
Your Honor, for argument's sake, assuming that's true, there's no clearly established case law requiring the deputies in the circumstances to do that. There is no case law particularized to these facts that requires a deputy to cover to acquire alternate clothing for someone who is reasonably not able to wear the clothing he has.
Well, my understanding of the case law is that if you've got an a fortiori case, it doesn't have to have been litigated before. If you can say it would have been unreasonable to strip him and search him in the middle of the hospital, even though you had probable cause to believe there are drugs concealed in orifices or whatever, then a fortiori, you can't do this. Isn't that, I won't call it an exception, but it's a common sense view of what's clearly established. If we have this clearly established, and this is even worse, then we don't have to have those facts in a precedent.
Your Honor, the Supreme Court makes an allowance for a rare, obvious case where you wouldn't need to have a clearly established case law for this purposes. However, my argument is this is not a rare, obvious case because of all the circumstances faced by the deputies. including that they were under, that Mr. Colbruno needed urgent medical care.
Why did it take 2 hours to get to the hospital then?
That is not contained in the complaint, Your Honor.
Well, can we make an inference about urgency then?
You can make an inference that they did not get there within an hour that the doctor told them they needed to get there for, but I think it is an unreasonable inference based on those facts.
Well, you're asking us to make an inference from the his mental condition and the ingesting of parts that there was an urgency.
This is a totality of the circumstances. The urgency is in the complaint. It's stated by the on-call doctor that they have a phone call with who says he needs to get there within an hour of the phone call for medical treatment and x-rays. The timing of the phone call is not given in the complaint. The timing of when they discovered that Mr. Colbruno had ingested materials is given in the complaint as 10 o'clock p.m. He doesn't get to the hospital after midnight. I think you can assume from those facts that the transport was delayed longer than the doctor told them it should be. However, I don't think it's a reasonable inference to say that the urgency has decreased because they took longer than they should have to get there. In fact, the urgency probably should have increased under those circumstances.
Your problem is this is a judgment on the pleadings.
Correct, Your Honor.
If this were summary judgment and you had some evidence about this, this is fine. But it just seems a little premature to be drawing the inferences you want to draw when it's quite reasonable, quite plausible to draw the inferences that the plaintiffs are drawing. Now, your evidence may show that there was sufficient justification that there's no plausible, that there's no legitimate claim here, certainly under qualified immunity. But this isn't at the summary judgment stage. Isn't that an important consideration here?
You're right, Your Honor, but the complaint, you can consider what is actually alleged in the complaint. And what is actually alleged in the complaint is that the doctor told the Denver Sheriff's Department they needed to get him there for x-rays and medical treatment within an hour. They were later than that, most likely from the inferences in the complaint. He had soiled his smock to the extent that it was no longer reasonable for him to wear it into the hospital. He was then taken in to the emergency room naked for treatment. Those are the facts in the complaint. That doesn't require any inference whatsoever.
Do you think motive or the intent of the officers matters in this case?
It could potentially, Your Honor, in establishing a constitutional violation. However, the only motivation in the complaint.
If this was undertaken for the purpose of punishment, malice, revenge, that it'd be a different case in your Denver's view?
It could be, Your Honor, but that is not in the complaint, and that is not what we're dealing with here with Mr. Colbruno.
Well, is their motive a necessary precondition in your view for to establish a constitutional violation?
It's on a totality of the circumstance, so it is one important consideration, but I don't think it is a bright line determinative. Your Honor, and I want to, the clearly established element, the cases cited by Mr. Colbruno, and I'm actually, I want to save the rest of my time for rebuttal rather than imparting a new argument. Sorry.
You may. All right. Thank you. We'll hear from Mr. Lane.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, David Lane and Anna Geigel on behalf of Mr. Colbruno. Years ago, you may all recall this, given the ages of everyone here. A longshoreman named Eric Hoffer wrote a book.
I thought at our age you start forgetting everything.
you forget yesterday, but you might remember back in the 70s when Eric Hoffer wrote a book called The Death of Common Sense. It got a lot of play back then, and it basically talked about this kind of thing. We are now apparently, if we adopt the argument of counsel, on the never-ending scavenger hunt for a case that's on all fours. And as Your Honor correctly pointed out, some things are simply so egregiously wrong that common sense tells you that you just simply don't do these things. There are no cases that we have cited that are directly on point. But common sense would say that you don't parade people naked through a public place when you're a police officer or a corrections officer.
Is this a Fourth Amendment seizure case, or is it a 14th Amendment and a right to bodily integrity?
Well, it's
case?
Pled as both. And
you got to have pick one.
Well, I think our game plan was to pick one as we got through discovery, but we never got that far. But clearly, I mean, Albright.
Do you agree that if it comes under the Fourth Amendment, then your 14th Amendment claim disappears?
Well, you know, they are.
This is the hardest part of the case: is whether it's Judge Timkovich's first question out of the box.
I mean, it is. Albright v. Oliver talks about the very limited notion of, substantive due process, but they specifically include the right of bodily integrity in the mix of all the various things that the substantive due process 14th Amendment claim.
That just seems what the case should be. It seems to me it's a substantive due process case, a variation of prison officials' executive action that's intended to humiliate or degrade somebody. That seems like where it belongs. And why are we chasing our tails and trying to figure out if this is a seizure?
Well, I mean, like I said, I think we pled it in an abundance of caution.
What's your best Fourth Amendment argument? What's your best argument that this fits within Fourth Amendment doctrine?
He was seized at the jail forcibly, taken out of the jail, transported to a hospital, and forcibly.
You can seize somebody who's already seized.
You can arrest somebody who's already arrested, actually. You know, there's a lot of case law stemming from prisons where somebody is a suspect in a homicide. They're already in prison. They are then questioned, and the issue is, do you have to read them Miranda or not? They're clearly in custody, and the Supreme Court, I believe, has said, not necessarily. They could have gotten up from their counselor's office where they were being questioned and just walked back to their unit.
That's like my hypothetical was that instead of doing this at the hospital, they put him in the middle of the cafeteria.
Right.
He was seized from his jail cell and put in the middle of the cafeteria, and that's a Fourth Amendment violation.
I'm not going to stand here and say, my God.
No, it's our problem.
Hinges on. No, I'm good with the 14th Amendment. I have no quarrel with this being a 14th Amendment case. And if the Fourth Amendment aspect of this goes away, as we get a day in court, that's really all I'm concerned about.
Well, if it's a 14th Amendment case, does intent play a larger role?
You know, I think it does, actually.
But then you didn't allege it.
Well, we can't know what we don't know. The example here is, as you said, it is, you know, if somebody is bleeding out or they've had a heart attack and they're getting CPR and they're on the verge of dying and they're naked, you know, you may not take time to go find something to cover them up. You wheel them into the hospital as fast as you can. Sorry about all that lack of privacy.
Why isn't that this case?
Because that was not the facts of this case. The facts of this case, as alleged in the complaint, and in the video that we have, is Mr. Colbruno is up and walking. He's not bleeding out. He's not having a heart attack. He has ingested some metal. No one is certain how much or of how serious this whole thing is. But he's walking on his own power. He's not an extremist. And there was no urgency. They chained him to a hospital bed once they got him there, and he waited. So that is not this case, and those aren't pled.
Our take on the urgency of the medical situation would be pretty important here.
Right? I believe, you know, all inferences from the complaint have to be drawn in favor of plaintiff. So, yes, inferences can be drawn. We wouldn't be here today if his heart had stopped beating and they were taking heroic measures to save his life. you know, and he was naked. You know, that's sort of too bad, so sad, but they saved his life. I mean, that's not what was happening here, and that's not what we pled in the complaint. What we pled in the complaint is there was absolutely no reason for them not to have gotten some sort of a covering for him. Instead, they paraded him naked through the halls of Denver Health. And the reasonable inference from that is that they just didn't care. I mean, that's the reasonable inference that I draw from those facts if I didn't know anything else about the whole case.
Well, if we're under the 14th Amendment, as I understand our cases, we would apply a shocks to the conscience standard.
Yes.
And which I think is a higher burden for a plaintiff than the Fourth Amendment standard. And I think what I hear your colleague saying, and I think what you're agreeing is a reasonableness or totality of the circumstances balancing test for us.
Well,
is that where we are?
I mean, the facts as pled in the complaint have to be taken as true. There was no urgency in this matter. They could have gotten him a covering.
Well, you're not saying there's no urgency, just not a matter of a couple minutes urgency.
Yes, like we pled in the complaint. They waited 2 hours to get him to the hospital. They didn't feel it was urgent, even if it was actually medically urgent. Nobody in the sheriff's department seemed to take that position. And again, we have Mr. Colbruno walking on his own power. He's wearing shackles and these big orange mittens, and he's trying his best to cover up. That's in the complaint. So he may be psychotic, but he knows that he's naked. He knows he's in a public place, and he's doing his best to protect his own human dignity. This is an interesting case also. It's not an Eighth Amendment case.
I was thinking it might be an Eighth Amendment case if they were doing this for malicious purposes.
And we don't know.
But you didn't plead that, so I guess it's...
I'm really reluctant to plead things
Mr.
like
Mr.
that.
I joined the scavenger hunt case.
I know.
I'm with you on that. It shouldn't be. But what's the case that makes this clearly established?
Well,
is it I know it when I see it, or is there a case?
Well, I'm a sports fan, so you ever watch Come On, Man? It's almost like that. Come on, man. You know it when you see it. This is just Potter Stewart's.
I've got to satisfy the U.S. Supreme Court that we're right on this.
I know. Okay. I know. Potter Stewart said once, pornography is impossible to define, but you know it when you see it. It's the same with one of these cases where it's so egregious. It's, come on, man. You just look at this.
But I suggested something else. If you can find a case, a precedent, that you can say, this is clearly worse, there's even less justification here, then I'd be much more comfortable than just saying, I know it when I see it. That I'm not sure how far that would get in the federal judicial system. Do you have a case where you can say, this is even worse than that?
Well, Schroff. I mean, Schroff out of this court, Schroff was my case, so I'm very familiar with the Schroff case. Schroff, you know, is breastfeeding. She's arrested. She has to expose her breast to a female cadet who is standing guard over her. And this court expressed some outrage over that.
That was the show, A Tattoo or something? Was that it?
No. That was a different case.
Okay.
That's in the brief. Schroff was arrested wrongly on a restraining order that didn't apply to her. And she ends up in jail. She's breastfeeding. She needs the pump.
Oh, okay.
She gets the pump at the jail, but the arresting officer makes a female cadet watch her pump her breasts. This court expressed outrage in Schroff, saying that is just wrong. And in fact, there's a great quote out of Schroff. In a civilized society, one's anatomy is draped with constitutional protections. This court said that. In all of the jail prison...
Was that a Fourth Amendment case?
Well, Schroff, you know, that's a good question also. It certainly was a Fourth Amendment case from the wrongful arrest. The restraining order did not.
That's what was your constitutional claim? The constitutional tort was.
That was a 14th. I believe I'm almost positive that was a 14th Amendment bodily integrity kind of a case on the pumping of the breast in front of the cadet.
So why would every reasonable police officer know from those facts in a 14th Amendment substantive due process case that he's violating the Fourth Amendment seizure
because
provision?
If this court is outraged over a prisoner having to expose one breast in the presence of a female cadet and talks about the integrity of the human body and human dignity, this is so much worse. What they did to Colbruno. It's far, far worse than what they did to Schroff. And you analyze the prison strip search case, or not even strip search cases, the prison cases where female guards are guarding male prisoners and they see them in the shower, or they see them naked. This court goes through an analysis where, you know, there are good penological justifications for those kinds of intrusions. They're minimal. Staffing issues exist in prisons. Sometimes these things happen. And it's only under these justifications that it's okay. Without those justifications, it's not okay, according to the Tenth Circuit. Now, you know, I think where every circuit in the country, I think, is gun-shy about these qualified immunity cases, because you get cases like White. You get cases like Aldaba, you know. When is it, come on, man, when is it so clear that everybody can see it, and when isn't it? And
well, you're right. It's a come on, man, if all of the justifications are discounted. So, I think your point is that it wasn't medically urgent, therefore none of these other reasons matter, right?
Well, those inferences.
When you discard those, I know it when I see it.
Well, Judge Hartz hit it right on the head when he said, they may be able to knock us out of the boat on summary judgment. They may have 50 great justifications for doing everything they did, but the record we have right now doesn't give any good justifications, and the reasonable inferences to be drawn from the pleadings are very clearly that they just did this because they really just didn't care anything about Mr. Colbruno. They treated him like a subhuman, and they just didn't care. Those are the reasonable inferences that you have to draw from the pleadings at this stage. If they come up with all those good reasons, we're out of luck. We'll lose summary judgment. But they haven't, because we're too early in the proceedings.
How can we make any inferences on motive?
You know, the reasonable, foreseeable consequences of someone's actions usually.
I mean, we'd have to make the inference that they didn't think there was a medical emergency.
True. Right? I mean, this is true in every deliberate indifference kind of a case. What's their motive for being deliberately indifferent? It's difficult to know what's in someone else's mind, but juries try to go there every single day, thousands of times all over the country. How do we know what's in their minds? There seemed to be no urgency, and they had ample opportunity, seemingly, to go get him something to cover up with, and they chose not to.
Well, you have to, it's your complaint. Did you have an obligation to establish a lack of urgency, which I think you could have done by asking the doctor? I mean, you could have done a little bit of investigation and thrown that in the complaint.
Do
you have that burden? I know it's a plausibility standard, and I don't want to.
Yeah, it is plausibility. The more the better, yes. I mean, if we could get a doctor at the jail to talk to us, you know, or a doctor at Denver Health, doctors will not talk to lawyers generally when they're dealing with prisoners, especially plaintiffs' lawyers. So I understand where you're coming from.
I understand your dilemma. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Lane.
Thank you very much.
Your time's expired, and Ms. Horn had a couple minutes.
Your Honor, for clearly established...
Ms. Horn, let me tell you the problem I'm wrestling with, and that is that your motion is premature. It should come as a summary judgment motion. A plaintiff pleads what they can. If they plead things and guesses and ifs and buts and things like that, then they're taken apart by defense lawyers. But if they stick to what they do know, then they're told it's too little to get over a 12B motion. Help me.
Your Honor, this is a qualified immunity case.
Please, thank you.
Your Honor. It is the... these defendants have a right not to go through discovery if they are entitled to qualified immunity. So,
of course, you're preaching to the choir.
So that's the difference between this case and a normal other case.
No, my problem is we chastise folks for putting things in the complaint that they don't know. And here, it looks like we're going after a plaintiff because they put everything they could possibly know. The jail people are not going to be talking to him. The hospital people are not going to be talking to him. So they plead the best they can do. And that's just not good enough, according to your view.
Your Honor, I think the complaint has to be plausibly pled by Iqbal and Twombly, and so there is some obligation on the plaintiff's attorney to plausibly plead his case in the complaint, and that requires a certain amount of factual definite.
Right. And we have facts pled in this.
Your Honor, and I believe under the totality of the circumstances pled in the complaint, my defendants are entitled to qualified immunity.
Counsel, your time's expired. We appreciate the arguments this morning. Counselor submitted. The case will be submitted.